And you are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. We are running on half speed here today. Our phones are out. Our internet is out, which is why you did not hear Time of Useful Consciousness in the last half hour. But this is, in theory, the WEFT Courier, a daily information service of WEFT, and we broadcast public affairs programming from 4 to 6 p.m. every Monday through Friday, which includes Democracy Now! From 4 to 5 p.m., and from 5 to 5:30 is usually Time of Useful Consciousness, followed by Disability Beat at 5:30. So Disability Beat will be on, but our guest is on the phone today. And since the phones are out, we have jerry-rigged a way to make this work. I hope it does. But in the meantime, let's go ahead and do our announcements for the day, and then we'll get started with the show. So for the movie fans out there, Me and Earl and the Dying Girl continues for a third week, where a high school kid along with his buddy isolates themselves and makes short movies as parodies of famous ones, until the day they meet a girl who will change their cynical perspectives on life. Check out the enthusiastic review on Connie's Hot Flashes on the Movies, airing daily on Morning Menu. The Wolf Pack, playing daily, is an astonishing documentary that looks into the world of the Angulo siblings who have been locked away from the outside world by their parents, where they reenact movies to keep themselves entertained. Continuing for a second week is the Japanese anime When Marnie Was There, and Daisies, a movie in the Women on the Top series celebrating women behind the camera, will screen on Wednesday night at 9 p.m. on July 15th. And finally, you can catch several showings of the crowd pleaser for young and old alike, Raiders of the Lost Ark. Remember, it's recommended to always check the Art Theater website for alternating dates and times at www.arttheater.coop/full-schedule. Today's Disability Beat is sponsored by our community partner, Jets Pizza. Jets uses only premium ingredients, including dough made fresh daily. Jets Pizza is located at 512 South Neal Street in Champaign, or you can reach them by phone at 217-352-3333. And we are also sponsored in part by attorney Baku Patel of Patel Law, who practices Social Security disability law and represents those who have been denied Social Security disability benefits. There are no fees unless Patel Law wins your case, and you can contact Patel Law at 217-384-1111 for a free consultation to discuss your Social Security disability case. Patel Law is located at 108 West University Avenue in Urbana, with offices in Danville and Decatur. For more information, you can visit them on their website, patellawteam.com, or again, the phone number, 217-384-1111. And now stay tuned for Disability Beat.
My name is Zoe Warner from Champaign County Christian Health Center. You're listening to Disability Beat on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM.
This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for an interview with Michelle Westmus, organizer for the Illinois Association of Microboards and Cooperatives and project coordinator of EPIC, everyone in Pike included and contributing. But first, disability news. Several disability advocacy groups are banding together to call for federal action to help prevent wandering among those with autism and other developmental disabilities. Dubbed the Autism Safety Coalition, the collective launched last week includes Autism Speaks, the Autism Society, the ARC, and the National Autism Association, among others. Research suggests that about half of children with autism have a tendency to bolt, and 42% of such cases involving children under age 9 have ended in death, the coalition said. In June alone, the groups indicated that 6 children with autism have died after wandering from a safe place. The newly formed coalition is launching a social media campaign to promote wandering awareness and is putting its weight behind federal legislation known as Avante's Law. The bill would provide funding to law enforcement agencies for wandering prevention efforts and allocate federal dollars to offer free electronic tracking devices to children with autism and other developmental disabilities who are prone to bolting. The legislation is named for Avante Akendo, a 14-year-old with autism who went missing in 2013 from his New York City school. His remains were discovered months later. Wendy Fournier is the president of the National Autism Association, which indicated that the legislation would offer many of the same resources to the disability community that are already provided to those affected by Alzheimer's disease. Fournier said, quote, "It's a common sense bill. Children and adults with autism and other disabilities frequently wander from safe settings, often with tragic consequences. It's time for federal action," end quote. U.S. Senator Chuck Schumer of New York first proposed Avante's Law last year and most recently introduced the legislation in January, but so far the bill has failed to gain traction in Congress. California state officials overseeing Sonoma Developmental Center announced Wednesday that they have reached an agreement that secures continued federal Medicaid funding for the facility while state officials move forward with plans to permanently close the center. The deal shelves state action that threatened to decertify 7 patient units at the facility and strip their Medicaid funding over state findings that care for hundreds of patients was deficient and unsafe. Sonoma Developmental Center officials fought the decertification plan, touting in their appeal last year major improvements caring for clients. At stake was a significant amount of money, representing more than a third of the developmental center's total annual expenses, according to figures provided Wednesday by the State Department of Developmental Services, which oversees the center. Overall, the center is home to 394 residents with developmental disabilities. The deal will not forestall the planned closure of the Sonoma Valley facility, only 3 remaining developmental centers in the state that care for people with severe mental and physical disabilities. The funding will be used to help with the transition of residents into community-based homes and programs, officials said. A mother and her 6-year-old son are accusing the Great Miami Valley YMCA of discrimination for allegedly barring a child who has Down syndrome from attending summer camp alongside his typically developing peers. Denise Watts and her son Stephen, who has Down syndrome, are seeking equal access to summer camp and inclusion for a young child with Down syndrome after she claims the YMCA as a summer camp provider refused her son entry into the regular summer camp and refused to make reasonable modifications to its practices and procedures or provide reasonable accommodations to the child, according to the 15-page lawsuit filed in U.S. District Court in Cincinnati. The child was told he could not attend a summer camp for typically developing children. Instead, the YMCA insisted the child attend Camp Campbell Guard for children with disabilities. According to the attorney for the YMCA, Curtis Cornett, he said that his client was, quote, "surprised and disappointed to learn of the filing," said Cornett. Quote, "Ms. Watts enrolled Stephen in summer camp at Camp Campbell Guard, and the YMCA understood that Ms. Watts had agreed that Camp Campbell Guard was the only safe summer camp alternative for Stephen," end quote. Watts said her son in the past has actively resisted programs restricted to just students with disabilities. According to the court filing, Watts would prefer her son, quote, "stay with the peers that he has grown up with through your programs at the Y. He has proven success in the aftercare program with reasonable accommodations," end quote. Watts said that the suit that her son has in the suit that her son has previously attended summer programs at the YMCA, as well as before and after school programs hosted by the Y. The lawsuit cites violations by the YMCA under the Americans with Disabilities Act, the Rehabilitation Act of 1973, and the Ohio Revised Code. Watts and her son are seeking punitive damages for the YMCA's intentional injurious conduct, compensatory damages for the deprivation of civil rights, and injunctive relief that requires the YMCA to provide reasonable accommodations. Watts said in the lawsuit, quote, "It's a disrespect to all those before me that fought for my son to have what he has, and it's an injustice to those who have yet to walk this path. I told the YMCA that I don't ever want to see another parent have to go through what I've been through," end quote. The Pennsylvania Department of Corrections has completed a training program for its 15,000 employees that focuses on mental illness and how to help people in crisis. Akin to traditional first aid, mental health first aid training first came to the U.S. from Australia in 2009, and the program used by the department was specifically tailored to public safety professionals. Its completion comes nearly 6 months after the department's settlement with the nonprofit Disability Rights Network, in which it pledged, among other things, to phase out solitary confinement for inmates with serious mental illnesses. In 2013, the network sued Corrections Secretary John Wetzel, claiming that mentally ill inmates were being punished with solitary confinement for behaviors rooted in their diseases. Such punishments worsened their conditions and made it hard for them to make parole. Under the agreement, 1,000 department employees also must go through a 32-hour crisis intervention class by 2017. And finally, New York City hosted its first Disability Pride Parade on Sunday, with more than 3,000 participants heading up Broadway using wheelchairs, canes, and guide dogs. Rapper Namel Norris, age 33, uses a wheelchair after being shot in the Bronx and paralyzed as a teenager. Norris said, quote, "We're here full force. I thought my life was over, but music is my calling. I have a purpose in life," end quote. Mayor Bill de Blasio kicked off the inaugural NYC Disability Pride Parade, saying he's proud his city is a national leader in supporting rights for people with disabilities. The Grand Marshal was former U.S. Senator Tom Harkin, the Iowa Democrat who 25 years ago sponsored the Americans with Disabilities Act. And that's the news for this week.
Don't bring around a cloud to rain on my parade. Not to fly, I've simply got to. If someone takes a spill, it's me and not you. Who told you you're allowed to rain on my parade? How much my bed now? Oh, be mindful. Any moment out. Your turn at bat, sir. At least I didn't fake it. Hat, sir, I guess I didn't make it. But whether I'm the rose or ship of friction, the freckle on the nose, life's completion, the Cinderella, shiny apple of its eye. Oh, I've got a throw once, I've got a throw once, only can die once, right, sir? What a fish, juicy, juicy, and you see, I've got to have my bite, sir. Get ready for me, love, because I'm a comer.
You are listening to WEFT Champaign, 90.1 FM. This is Disability Beat. I'm Vicki Nicewander, joined today by my good friend Michelle Westmoss, who is on the phone, and hopefully this is going to work. As I noted at the beginning of the show today, that our phones are not working, and so we've kind of jerry-rigged a call here so that Michelle can talk with us, and hopefully this will work out. Welcome to the show, Michelle.
Hello. Thank you, Vicki.
Hey, that actually doesn't sound too bad. So that's wonderful. So, you know, you've been on the program before. You're involved in a lot of stuff. So why don't you start out by just reintroducing yourself to the listeners?
Okay. I live in a small town in West Central Illinois, in Pittsfield. And we've been here about 20 years. I'm originally a suburban girl from the Chicago area. My family consists of myself and my husband and a 23-year-old son. What brought me to the world of disability is my daughter, who is now 17, who was born with Kabuki syndrome. So I was a teacher and a daycare provider, and then when she was born, we didn't expect anything, but she had a lot of significant medical problems. So suddenly I couldn't be in the classroom, couldn't do home daycare, and really needed to tend to her for several years.
So later, I don't think many people probably know what Kabuki syndrome is. Can you kind of give a little summary of kind of the challenges that your daughter had in that with that disability?
Kabuki syndrome is similar to Down syndrome and others that people might be more familiar with, in that it really impacts every bodily and sensory system in some way, but for each person, how it's impacted is very different. So my daughter has some vision loss, some hearing loss, some speech difficulties, motor issues, large motor, fine motor, balance, has had a lot of orthopedic surgeries. So she just has a little bit of something in just about every area. And when you add them all up, it's a pretty big impact on her life.
And I know that you have worked very, very hard over the years. She's in high school now, correct?
Right. She'll be a senior this year.
And you've worked very hard over the years to make sure that she has opportunities for inclusion in her regular school setting. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. We have the good fortune of living near to the School for the Visually Impaired and the School for the Deaf in Jacksonville. We're about 30-some minutes away. So folks from there were involved in Aubrey's life from the very beginning in early intervention. And we were able to be connected with people who believed in the philosophy of inclusion and who were able to give me the courage to believe in her potential.
And so how did that work out? I mean, when she started kindergarten or even pre-K in your school district, was there a fight, or did the school district kind of work with you to make it happen?
Right. So, you know, with good advocates helping nurture that in me, by the time we went to that first IEP meeting when Aubrey was three, to start preschool, I was able to strongly advocate for her to be in the regular classroom. In our school district, very recently, about just a few years before she was ready for preschool, we began having a pre-K program, and we also had early childhood special ed, which was a self-contained class of just, you know, a handful of other 3- and 4-year-olds who had speech delays and motor issues. So in that setting, she would have been with other children who couldn't speak either. And communication was her biggest issue at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I really wanted her in the regular pre-K setting where she could be in that rich environment of all of those chattering children. But the school district didn't think that seemed like a good idea. They didn't couldn't imagine how a 3-year-old with challenges could manage in that environment. And so we had some issues to start with. Her birthday was after the school year had started, so the pre-K classroom was full. So she wasn't able to have a space in that classroom the first year, but the year she turned 4, she went to the pre-K program in the morning and had the full experience of all with all of the other kids with a one-on-one aide who made sure she managed through it. Then she had lunch and a nap at the school which was something new they had to figure out how to do. They never had a preschooler stay through the midday and have those needs met.
Mm-hmm.
And then she went to the early childhood special education self-contained setting. And in that setting, she had her speech therapy, occupational therapy, physical therapy, the hearing and vision specialist, and all of those different people came into her life in the afternoon and interrupted that time of the day so that she had a fully intact regular preschool experience with all of her peers. And I think that set her up for a good entry into kindergarten and elementary school.
And I think probably prepared the school district for having her as a student in regular education down the road.
Exactly. So they were able to see that it worked and that we were willing to follow through on our intentions and make sure that it happened. And that we expected them to find a way to do something even if they'd never done it before. And they did a decent job all the way through. I think that our small school district has met her needs quite well, has believed in her. Our IEP meetings are generally quite positive. She's a very likable kid and doesn't have any behavior issues, is rewarding to work with because you see the benefits of the work because she tries her hardest all of the time and is eager to please. What's been disappointing is that I don't see that carrying over to other students in our district. And
meaning that the other students in the district aren't included to the level that Aubrey is.
Right, and that you get the sense that, well, that worked for her because there was something special about her situation, but these other students can't possibly manage as well as she did. When really there wasn't anything exceptional about her except that she was given the opportunity and the support she needed. That's what was exceptional.
And what impact did that have on her specifically? Overall,
well,
I mean, how has it affected her life?
I think in every possible way. She is included in extracurricular activities at school. Because we're a small town, everybody knows her. We were actually just talking about this today, she and I. She's quite aware of the concept of advocacy and disability rights. I've talked to her about it since she was able to listen. We were talking about the difficulty of making friends. She has some autistic type challenges, and social skills are very difficult for her. She was talking about the difficulty making friends at camp. She had just come home from a camp out of town where everybody doesn't already know her. And so she made camps with the counselors because their job is to make friends with you.
Mm.
But she didn't really make friends with her peers because they were active in the very noisy activities in the recreation area, and she needed to isolate herself from that because it was too much going on. So she was then isolated from the students. But she was saying, you know, at school that doesn't happen because everybody knows you in a small town. So everybody's automatically your friend because they know you.
Right. So how has this experience impacted you professionally over the years? Obviously, you started out as doing daycare and that kind of thing, but you have really gone from the area of teaching into a professional life in disability work.
Right. I can remember I had an advocate come help me with some issues I was having with the early intervention system, and I can remember him sitting on my couch, and I said, I want to be you when I grow up, because he was helping me figure out how to make my daughter's life what it needed to be. And I really don't like politics, but later on, it was when Obama was campaigning for his Senate seat, and he came to Pike County, And I remember that was right about the time when I realized, as much as I hate it, I've got to become involved and understand politically what impacts our people with disabilities, because I have no choice. This is going to be important in her life. And so that sparked involvement with the Arc of Illinois, and I began working for the Family Support Network. And one thing led to another and has really launched a career in disability advocacy, working with other families and trying to make a difference so that we don't have to work so hard to have a good experience for just one individual at a time, that, you know, trying to change things so that everybody can have a good life, even if their parents don't have time to dedicate 100% effort to advocating on their behalf everywhere they go.
Right. So now you are you're playing a couple of different roles at the moment.
Right. My main role is Aubrey's mom, of course, but secondary, the Central Illinois organizer for the Illinois Association of Microboards and Cooperatives. So in that capacity, I'm able to work with families in Central and Southern Illinois who want to explore microboards and cooperatives as ways to improve outcomes for their loved ones.
And inclusive community-based kinds of options, correct?
Exactly. Working very much outside of the system as we know it, working with families and individuals to really dig deeper into their community and make connections and find ways to make contributions and meet their needs regardless of whether or not they're on the waiting list or they have services or if they're in school or whatever.
Right. And so that has led you to working on this new project, which we're not going to delve into a great deal today. We'll bring you back for another show in a week or two and talk about EPIC, but just give folks a little bit of teaser about what that project is all about.
Well, this is so exciting. EPIC stands for Everyone in Pike, Included and Contributing, and Pike is the county where I live, where Pittsfield is the county seat. We are a small rural community where everyone cares about their neighbor, where we can get things done because there's not a lot of red tape. My son needed a skate park. He was into skateboarding. There wasn't anywhere to go. We talked to the mayor at an auction one day where we happened to see him, and before you knew it, we had a group working on raising money and building a skate park, and now we have one. So regular people can make things happen. People care about each other, and they come together. So our goal with EPIC is that we will simultaneously work with civic organizations, churches, businesses, all aspects of the community to have a deeper understanding of disability and understand more about why and how to include their neighbors and friends with disabilities. And simultaneously working with some individuals, some adults with developmental disability, to build their personal network, dig deeper into the community, work similar to what we do with IAMC, the Association of Microboards and Cooperatives, already, but find the places where their interests might be valued, where their contributions can be made.
And obviously this is a topic that's going to take, this is going to take a lot longer than the 15 minutes that we had today. So I thank you for joining us. And why don't you give a website where people can go learn more about EPIC in anticipation of you coming back to talk more about it on air.
Sorry about that. Didn't have a clock. Couldn't tell how I was going. The website is www.iambc.org. And there is a web page on that site dedicated to EPIC.
Thanks very much for joining us today. Michelle.